beautiful weather that you give us, the changing of the seasons, sunshine, Lord. We thank you, Lord, that we can come to your house to worship you. We thank you for who you are and for Christ who died for our sins, shed his blood on Calvary. We pray you bless this message this morning and help the words to be words from you and words that would help us to live. In Jesus' name, amen. So I'd like to speak this morning about biblical principles of management and organization. And I don't know about how many of you go through different things at work and you learn new principles and things like that. And so that's sort of something that's been going on at my work and it's kind of going through my mind. And a lot of things that come along, somebody comes along and says, hey, listen to this new idea I have for you, and I've written a book about it, and so on. And then you start looking in the Bible, and then you're like, oh, wait a minute, God already knew about this way back. So that's kind of a little bit where I want to go this morning. So, sometimes when we look at God's creation, scientists kind of study different parts of it. We experience the creation as we go through life, learn how different things work, and we start to discover things, and I think we maybe get tiny microscopic glimpses of how God has made everything to work. And I think there's a lot of laws and things that he's put in place there, and a lot of complexities, many complexities that he's put in place. And then we come and we say, well, we think we know how this all works, but then 100 years later something else is discovered, and they're like, oh, those people back then, they hardly knew anything, so I'm pretty sure maybe 100 years from now they'll say that about how it was. So when we think of things being organized and managed well, it would be the direct opposite of chaos. Now, what is chaos? Chaos is a state of utter confusion or disorder, a total lack of organization or order. It could be any confused or disorderly mass, or you could say mess, either or. A chaos could be confusion in the forms of like communication, like phrases we don't understand or that are being sent out that are not understood. All right, thank you. It could also refer to just space or formless matter to what would have preceded creation. So when before God created the world, we think of what was there before maybe as that God created out of nothing, or he created out of chaos and made order and created a beautiful world. Just different definitions of when there is not order and when there is not direction given. Then I thought, what are some practical examples of like where there could be disorder or confusion? And I had to think, what if there were no street signs? Or how about we talk about what if the GPS would get knocked out? What would we all do who rely on our Google Maps to get somewhere? We would suddenly have to pull out a map or something. That would be an example of confusion. Like we saw in the Ukraine slides, what if someone just decided to rearrange signs block them out so they couldn't be read? That would also be very confusing. How about no traffic lights? No one knows when to go at the intersection or who goes next. How about you went shopping and there was no price stickers on the products? And you didn't know how much anything costs, so you just load up your cart and you get to the register and then find out the price once you're checking out. It'll be a little bit too late to make your purchase decision at that point. How about we just reverse the house numbers on everybody's mailbox? That would be kind of confusing as well. How would you get your mail? How would you get any deliveries? Or how about you bought a new piece of furniture from IKEA or somewhere? We had to put it all together, and the box came, but there was no instructions. No way to know how to put together which piece goes first. And some of us don't do well when there are instructions, but imagine if there weren't any instructions. So, you know, those would be some examples of chaos. So what are some principles we can use to stay organized? Well, some of them can come from the creation. When God created the world, he took that nothingness or chaos, if you will, and created something that functioned and was neat and orderly. And one of the principles that I thought of right away when I thought of the creation account was, isn't it interesting how it was in 7 days? So it was kind of segmented. So God would create part of it, and then he would complete it, and then he would rest for that day. And then he would complete another part of it and rest for that day. You know, day one was light, day two, sky and the atmosphere, day three, the dry ground plants, sun, moon, and stars, day four, day five, the birds and sea creatures, day six, land animals, humans, and then day seven, he took an entire day to rest. And when we look at that, I had to think about when we're also, and I think God has given us a portion of his creative abilities so that we can also be creators in our own way, not to make something out of nothing, but to use what God has given us and the skills that God has given us to make things. That we also, sometimes we have tasks that are just too big for one day, or tasks that we can't quite get our mind around. And I know sometimes I look at things as like, I have no idea how, you know, anyone's ever going to get that done. And, you know, it actually still baffles my mind a little bit when I hear about people who put up a building and they say it takes 2 years or 3 years or 5 years to get something built. And I'm just, I just can't wrap my head around that, hardly. But sometimes when you take those projects and you divide them out into manageable parts, it can really help to get it done. The other thing is, if you look at the whole scope of the entire project, you might not have the motivation to get started. But if you tell yourself that if you do today's work, then you will be doing what the Lord has for you to do for that day, then you can continue on and eventually get to that point of completion. So it was almost like God encapsulated each day's work in that day of creation. And we know that the order he created things was very important, because the birds and sea creatures needed the things that were previously made to survive, and as well as the land animals, and needed the dry ground, for instance. So the order of things are done is very important. So for some reason, God easily could have created everything at once, but chose to divide it out over those 6 days. So I think it may be an example for us. And then there's a couple of us who are also night owls that like to stay up late and think we can get it done. Well, guess what? The Lord rested. He completed it, and he rested. So so one thing to remember there is that the work that you leave will probably be there for you the next day to pick up again. It's not going to go anywhere. So so definitely remember to rest, and then also the example of the one day and seven of resting, of the Sabbath rest as well. And then what else did God do in the creation? But after each day, he said, he looked at it and he said it was good. So it's almost like that looking back and evaluating. And I think when it's in bite-sized chunks, it's easier to look back and evaluate progress and see how good, how well things are progressing. Not that God needed to reevaluate because what he does is perfect, but maybe the example for us is that by taking smaller chunks, we can look back and evaluate the work that's done that day and maybe make improvements for the next days following. So what's the benefit of rest? Well, rest allows us to relax our minds and our bodies, and then helps us to hit the next week of work with vim and vigor. So, or if you have a work that needs more creative talent, if you take a rest from thinking and do something that doesn't take a lot of thought, often you can come back and be able to solve a problem again that takes a lot of thought. So we need to remember to rest and not just keep going and going. There in creation, definitely think it. God left us an example of dividing out the work and segmenting it and then completing each task. The next example I was thinking of was just about Noah and the ark, and how as Noah was building the ark, you know, some of the things that he might have encountered. One thing I wondered about Noah is, did he have to study shipbuilding? Or and those of you who are out to the ark encounter, I think they address some of these questions. I'm not sure if all the answers, but did he need to study it? If I had to make a guess, and the Bible doesn't tell us for sure, I would guess he had to do a bit of both. He had to study and learn, be diligent about figuring out how he's going to build it, and then also that the Lord gave him the skill and the help to build it. And it does clearly say that the Lord gave him the complete instructions ahead of time. So it may have been complete and thorough enough that he could have kept going, but I don't know if he had every last detail or if he had to work out some of the details as he went. But either way, we know that the Lord gave it to him ahead of time and then worked out the details as he had to build it. And then on the thought of management, we often hear this thought about building a team or surrounding yourself with a team and what that consists of, different ways of building a team. Well, Noah probably had the best team of all. He had his family united around him, and he had to raise them and to stay with him and to stay away from the evil influences around them in that culture. They were obviously willing to spend much of their lives helping him with the project. And I think building our families around us, helping them to be a team and working together to accomplish great things is a real blessing that we can definitely seek after. Then we have like the whole logistics we have the bringing the supplies and the materials to the ark and coordinating all of that. And then the idea of skill. And, you know, when I think of skill, I think of the verse David gave in, it was Psalm 144:1. It was, I believe he says, he thanks the Lord for teaching his hands to war and his fingers to fight. And now we don't fight today, but I'm sure back then when they had swords and bows and arrows and things, there was a lot of probably muscle memory that you had to have. We talk about finger typing and how some people can, you know, just finger type. Well, I think back then it was, you know, I don't think they had to think a whole lot when they drew their bow and shot an arrow. or when they swung a sword. I think it was kind of that muscle memory. And he attributes that not to his own skill or his own power, but that the Lord has given him that skill to do that work. Then the other thing that Noah had was he had a deadline, and he didn't know exactly when that deadline was, but he did have a deadline to work against. So there was probably definitely the pressure and the stress of that. One thing that we don't see is procrastination. Now, I don't know how many of you have lazy boy chairs at home or a really comfortable couch or something like that. I have a chair that we got recently that I think just reaches out and swallows me up sometimes, and it's really hard to get out of. But we need to remember that putting things off just makes it take longer to get them done. And so to counteract the part about resting, we have to make sure that we have the motivation to get the work done. So we have the thought about Noah building his team and coordinating the supplies, managing the building of the ark. Next thing I'd like to look at is just Moses and the thought about delegating work. If we go to, I'm sure you all know where I'm going, but this is, I've always been fascinated with these verses in Exodus 18. Verse 13, it says, "And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from the morning unto the evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning until evening? And Moses said unto his father-in-law, Because the people come unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another. And I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, The thing that doest is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away both thou and this people that is with thee. For this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice, and I will give thee counsel. And God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people men, able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them, to be rulers of thousands, and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, and but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. If thou shalt do this thing, and God command thee so, then thou shalt be able to endure, and all this people shall go to their place in peace." And Moses hearkened. So Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law, and did all that he said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel, and made them heads over the people. Rulers over thousands, rulers over hundreds, rulers over fifties, and rulers over tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard causes they brought unto Moses, but every small matter they judged himself. And Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into the land. So maybe I'll just ask you all the question. What was the benefit of Moses setting up these rulers underneath him? And maybe what were not the benefits? You feel there was a disadvantage?
Or he lost touch with the people.
He lost touch with the people. He was now separated. It was that's probably a disadvantage by delegating.
Yes.
But it also relieved his stress and took a lot off of his mind.
And that's one of the benefits. It relieved the stress and took all the things off of his mind.
Developed the future leaders.
Yes, exactly. So these people who were, they were probably just, something's wrong, let's run to Moses. Something's wrong, let's run to Moses. Something's wrong, let's run to... They suddenly had to figure things out for themselves. And then it says they still brought the hard causes to Moses. The one thing is, it seems like they did have a selection process. So it said they had to be men that feared God. They had to be truthful. They couldn't be covetousness. They had to hate covetousness, so they couldn't be like taking bribes and stuff, mm-hmm. and to change the judgment. And then there was a hierarchy, and we may or may not agree with hierarchies in all cases. Sometimes we like things more flat, where we can get directly to the person in charge. We all would like to speak to the president of the company at all times, or the manager of the store, but we aren't always able to do that. And it does seem like with our shortcomings as humans, we need things like this to help us manage, because otherwise we're not able to work together in that way. So definitely set up a hierarchy and split out the workload. So I think that's something that we need to do. I know I tried to give my boys more and more work to do that I would normally do, but there's just some things I'm just nervous about. I'm like, well, if I let them do that, they might not do it correctly, and it's really important, and I better just take care of that. But as the opportunity arises, we just hand more and more of that over to them and let them grow into that sort of thing. And I think that's also true in the church, that doesn't have to just be the leaders who are doing all the work, but that we can all chip in and do our part as well. The next part about organization is the tabernacle. I have always been very fascinated by the arrangement of the tabernacle, and that's a whole other study there. I mean, not just the arrangement, but the building of it, and all the symbolism and all those sort of things that go with it. When we think about the arrangement and the assignment of just the camp around the tabernacle and those who were assigned to do different things, let me just go to Numbers 2, verse 1. It says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, Every man of the children of Israel shall pitch by his own standard, and with the ensign of their father's house, far off about the tabernacle of the congregation shall they pitch. And on the east side toward the rising of the sun shall they of the standard of the camp of Judah pitch throughout their armies. And Nathan the son of Amminadab shall be captain of the children of Judah. And his host and those that were numbered of them were 74,600. And those that do pitch next to them unto him shall be the tribe of Issachar. And Nethaneel the son of Zuar shall be captain of the children of Issachar. And his host and those that were numbered thereof were 54,400. And so on. It goes on about how they were going to arrange the different tribes, and what's interesting there is well, there's a couple things, but the one thing is that the whole part about the signs. So God was also very organized in that the children of Israel were arranged into 12 tribes. So we had the 12 tribes of Israel. And then when we think about the Israelites, we can always, start with, well, what tribe was so-and-so from? So we have the tribes. And you have the whole thing about the ensign. So it was back to the idea of a street sign leading you the right direction. It tells you what the right path is to go on, or which exit you should get off on, or that sort of thing. We have that idea that it was clearly marked which tribe was which. And I think that's a good lesson for some of us. We have, I don't know how many of you have piles of nuts and bolts and tools, and I don't know what is what. So labeling and marking things, definitely a good thing. Now, it can be overdone. I've seen too many labels that almost get too confusing. But I think that was definitely God giving a testimony of the children of Israel in the wilderness, that as they camped, that they each had their ensign, and it was clear which tribe was which. And then the other thing that was interesting was the tabernacle was in the center, and depending on what renderings of the tabernacle you look at, it was kind of shaped like a cross, kind of pointing to Jesus coming and the Messiah and the final sacrifice. But then the Levites, the Kohathites, the Gershonites, sons of Merari, were all close to the tabernacle, and and they also had clear assignments of what they should do. Sons of Kohath basically carried the furniture and articles of the temple. So if you think of things like maybe like the candlestick or the altar of incense and that sort of thing, they're carrying the furniture of the temple. The sons of Gershon carried the curtains, the coverings, the ropes. There's all these badger skins and things over the tent of meeting there. And so they had their assigned jobs, what they needed to do. What was interesting there was that they needed to be between the ages of 30 and 50. So not too young, but not too old. So old enough to be mature enough to know that this was a really serious thing that they were doing, but maybe not too old to have lost strength to not be able to do the heavy work of loading it up and carrying it. Yeah, sorry about everybody here who's under 30, but you'll get there soon. So then there were the sons of Merari who they carried the bars, the boards, the sockets, and the pillars. So there were they all had their assigned work. So they knew what exactly they were supposed to do. So I think having clear work assignments is definitely good. If we all know clearly what we're supposed to do, maybe not just go clean up or go organize everything, but maybe make lists and know exactly what order things should be done in. And then we also have the people, they had the strength to do the work, and I think that was important. And then you have the whole idea of being close to work. So what if the Levites would have had to walk all the way from the outside of the camp to the tabernacle, you know, every time? It wouldn't have been as convenient. I mean, I think also they could have been there to protect the tabernacle as well. So that's just the thought of bring your work close to you. So I don't know. One thing I remember doing is when a tractor or something would break down out in the field, and you'd say, oh, I need a 9/16th wrench or 7/8th wrench. You go back for the 7/8th wrench, and then you drive back out to the field, and, oh, I actually need an inch and an eighth wrench yet. And so you drive back and get the inch and an eighth wrench. So a little bit better to either bring the tractor in close to the tools or bring the tools to the tractor and not just keep running back and forth like that. So basically, the other thing that comes to mind is when there's work to be done, make sure you're close. I know some of us live a little farther away from church here, some are closer, and I know we have that commute that's always sticks in our mind. It's like, oh, I have a 40-minute drive, or some of you are a little over an hour even, or further. So being close definitely has its advantage. And then when you're close to your work, you can also see what's going on as well. So then moving on, we also need to pay attention to details, or some of you might do that naturally, catch all the details. I don't catch all the details. I have to read things two or three times to get all the details. Somewhere along the way, I got the idea that I could speed read, and so I read like the first couple words, the middle couple words, and the last couple words, and I say, oh, I know what they're saying, and it doesn't turn out good, and I usually miss the details. When I think of details in the Bible, my mind went to the to the genealogies. So the genealogies, when we read through them, they're very long, and they can kind of be monotonous. But I think that shows us that God wants to keep track of the details. He wants to, there's a lot of things in those genealogies. It keeps track of the lineage of children of Israel, which is very important to see God's working through them. But it also, if we track through the genealogies, it shows us the lineage of Jesus and how all these different people played into the lineage of Christ. And then with genealogies is also this thought of history, right? So I'm sure a lot of you children get to take history, and sometimes you might wonder, why do I have to know what year Christopher Columbus discovered America, or some other event, or what year some very unfamous president took office, you know, or who was his vice president, or why do I have to know all this? You know, I just want to know the fun stuff in history. I don't want to know all the details. And I think we all know why studying history is important, because those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it, right? If you look at Ecclesiastes 1:9, it says there that there is no new thing under the sun. So even though we live in a day and age where everyone's saying, well, we finally discovered this, we have all these new things that we know so much about, when we look back in time, it's kind of mankind just repeating what's already been done. So I think that's another good reason to study history. And I think that shows God's attention to detail. And then, you know, there's also God's attention to detail in nature as well. Very detailed and specific things. How about the thought of planning? Luke 14:28-33. Let's go ahead and read this to you. Luke 14:28-33. It says, and this is about counting the cost to follow Jesus. But he says here, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, The man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an embassage and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple." So when we decide to follow Jesus, we need to make sure we're ready for the price we need to pay. We may have family that reject us. We may need to give up our work or our occupation or the place we live. We may have to even face persecution and death. And the idea is that when we make that decision to follow Christ, that we know what we're getting into. And the same is true in our everyday life, that when we make plans, we need to know what we're getting into. We need to try and avoid the surprises, try and avoid things that will interrupt what we're trying to accomplish. I know there's unfinished buildings in the world where something went wrong partway through that was unplanned for. So we need to definitely make sure we're planning ahead, making sure that, for instance, a king here, that he had enough funds to complete the project, or in the case of the battle, that he had enough troops, and the troops were capable enough, had the ability enough to conquer the enemy, or else negotiate peace with them. And so he's looking at his options, different options there. The next thing I like to look at is the thought of waste. So who can tell me some things that we waste?
Time.
Time, definitely. That's one thing. What else can we waste?
Talents.
We can waste our talents and our gifts. And we waste tons of food in this country. That's exactly right. We can waste funds and materials and lots of those sorts of things. So in Mark 8, 19 to 20, I'd like to read those verses. It's Jesus speaking. He says, "When I break the five loaves among 5,000, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up?" They say unto him, 12. "And when the seven among the 4,000, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up?" And they said, 7. And he said unto them, "How is it that you do not understand?" And I just always found that fascinating, how the disciples went around and gathered the fragments after the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000. It seems like they were being frugal, and maybe that's just what you did when you're out in the desert and there wasn't anything to eat. You made sure you had something for your next meal too. But I think we need to remember that too, that we should make sure that we are not being wasteful and gathering up fragments and getting the full life and use out of something before and not just throwing things away. We have the whole idea of wasting time, and I appreciated that part about the distractions. We have our cell phones, and we can have our notifications on and be looking at whatever the next deal is, or the next thing that's the next notification for social media, or next text message. We can waste time doing that. One thing I'm looking at is how the whole thing of distractions is when we lose our focus. So sometimes we can try to focus in on something, and quickly something else comes along, we lose our focus, and then we move on to that, and we move on to the next thing, and then soon we're down a bunny trail. So that's another way that we can waste time, and that's something I am trying to work on. Jesus and the whole idea of waste reminded me of what Jesus said in Matthew 6:25, where he says, "Take no thought for tomorrow." So don't worry about the things that are of tomorrow. So in other words, don't take tomorrow's problems and waste your time and your energy worrying about them when you can worry about the things that are here today and now. The other concept that often goes along with this whole idea of waste is an excessive inventory, and some of this goes back to at least what I've been learning is when Toyota was making vehicles, and they were trying to get things efficient, and they would go through their factories and look for parts, and then they would uncover large stockpiles of parts that no one quite knew where they came from or what they were for. And it was somebody's job to, stamp out door hinges. So they were happily stamping out door hinges and getting paid, and just making lots and lots and lots of door hinges. And then all of a sudden it became this giant stockpile that finally got somebody with a forklift put back in the back corner, and nobody knew where it was, anymore. So the whole idea that where Jesus comes in and tells us in our spiritual lives, he says to lay not up treasures here on earth, but put your treasures in heaven. So if we're building all kinds of treasures here on earth, and we're not rather investing in heaven, then we're also basically just accumulating that wealth. And I believe in Ecclesiastes it says I think it has two different accounts. I think the one account is the father saves up the wealth and then gives it to his son, and then his son squanders it all. Or there's some kind of upheaval or something, and all that accumulated wealth is lost. And I'm not saying it's wrong to accumulate wealth, because we know that wealth can be given to further the Lord's work and his purposes. But just accumulating it for the sake of accumulating it, I mean, I guess you could have a trust fund that says for the next 300 years, I want this money to be used to further, you know, such and such a purpose that I've... But I'm still, my thought is like, I don't, first of all, is like, what good is that going to do you after you leave this life? Second of all, we don't know what's going to, what kind of upheaval is going to come to this world. So I don't think we need to be, accumulating. And I'm not saying that you need to, like, have a certain limit on your checking account or savings account or anything like that. I'm just saying that over accumulation in this life is probably not a good thing. And while we're talking about the whole Toyota thing, there's another principle that they talk about, and that's what they say is go and see, which means that you're going to basically the problem was lots of people could sit in meetings and talk about the problems that were out there, maybe look at some charts and say, you know, there's a problem in our production or whatever, our quality is going down, something's wrong somewhere. But nobody would ever leave the boardroom and try to solve the problem. And the principle was that you had to actually go down there to the production floor and go and see where things were breaking and where things were not working. That's something that, like I said, I have that chair that swallows me up, and that's something I have to remind myself too, is like, get up and go and figure out what's going on and go see what's happening. And we have lots of verses in the Bible to support that. You know, in Genesis 37, I think multiple times, at least twice, Jacob sent Joseph down to check on his brother. And the one time he brought an evil report back, but that seemed to be like what his part of his job was, to go to help them, but also to check on them. And we know in Proverbs it says, be diligent to know the state of your flocks and herds. Or how about this one? You have a problem with your brother in church, but you'd rather solve it by talking to another brother about it and talking about that brother. And you say, well, yeah, that brother really has that problem and he really irks me and whatever, but you don't go and talk to that brother directly. And that's the whole idea of Matthew 18, verse 15. Go to the brother directly rather than talking about them and trying to solve it behind their back. It would be better to go directly to them and discuss it with them. With the principle of go and see, there, you know, there's another thing. For instance, let's just go to this illustration. I don't know how many of you were alive when Three Mile Island had its little crisis there. I don't know, depends who you talk to, how bad it was. I think I might have been born that year or the year after. I'm not sure. It was 77 or 78, I think. 79, so I was 1 year old. Yeah, so, but one thing that was really interesting there was nobody quite knew what was going on. Of course, the operators in the control room didn't quite know what was happening because they were getting conflicting signals, and they didn't, you know, there was a valve was opened or closed, not as it should be. But then this was getting out in the media, and people were getting scared and worried and, like, fleeing the area and that sort of thing. And I think word got to Jimmy Carter at the White House, and he had been involved in nuclear reactors, I guess, in the Navy before he had become president. And he said, oh, nuclear problem, let's go. So he gets in his helicopter, comes up to PA and visits Three Mile Island. And, I don't know if there was a lot of other great things that Jimmy Carter did, but that was one of his classic moments. And then you have the whole idea of, you know, being the political appearance, you know, you want to be the person at the disaster showing, you know, at the right time. You don't want to be on vacation when the disaster strikes or anything, or then you're in big trouble. But that was a good moment for him because he showed up and he wasn't afraid, and he showed the people that there's no immediate danger and there's nothing here to fear, and we'll get this thing under control. So that was an example too of just going there, being there, and getting the problem solved. There's a lot of things that I think are beneficial when we can organize them. Okay, the one other thing I wanted to talk about is being gifted and being skilled. So we know when it was in the Old Testament, when it was time to build the tabernacle, that they brought in the most skilled workmen that they could find, people that could sew all the coverings and the drapes and that were good with needlework, and people that could make the wooden things, people that knew how to hammer gold and brass and all those things. And the same with the temple. And I know, I think Solomon even, you know, he brought in cedars from Lebanon and cypresses and all kinds of materials. And he found the skilled craftsmen. And I think there is something to knowing what your gifts are. There's a part where anybody can learn to do any job. And I think if you do a job long enough, you start to enjoy it because you know how to do it. So you definitely want to give things a try. And I hope, you know, that's something I can help my children with. But then there's just some things you're like, well, that's a kind of a God-given gift. I think they're gifted in that area, and I think they need to pursue that and make that work. So I think we need to go with our gifts. And then the Lord's given the church gifts in the body so that we need to use our gifts to bless the congregation as well. The last thing I'd like to close with is that not everything has to be super organized. So you don't have to feel like we don't have to number our seats here this morning and then you have to sit in your assigned seat or anything like that, give you tickets to come in or whatever, something really complicated. Some things are meant to be somewhat disorganized. For instance, you know, you have living organisms, right? So I had a cold last week, and all of a sudden my nose was just running like crazy, like a faucet. And it's just like, why is it doing that? I don't know, but it seems like there was an unanticipated attacker. So there must have been some cold germ, maybe some pollen and some allergies and some things that all decided to attack. And then my body decided, well, let's flush these things out. And but did the body have a plan to do that? No, but it came together at the right time to flush those things out. So even though things don't appear organized and they're not in that rigid, you know, maybe not in that rigid seven-day structure or not in the structure like a tabernacle, that even though they're disorganized, they're still all doing their part. And then from God's point of view, they probably are all organized and still doing what they need to do, but they're being smart about it. Or we have things like, you know, the constellations in space that are, and the planets and all in their orbits. Or think about, like, you might look at one of those pictures of mountains in Colorado or somewhere and all the pine trees and everything, and it looks so beautiful from far away up in the, maybe it's like a drone footage or something up above the mountains. But then if you got closer to those trees, you might see all the intricate details of the pine needles and so on. And then you get down into like where the animals are living, and then down into the soil and the all the decomposed things that are there, and then subsoil. And it can just go on and on and on. It can appear disorganized, but yet it is still part of a very complex system. I don't think we've even wrapped our mind around how that all works. So I think I'm safe to say that as far as things that maybe are okay to be less organized, I have the family down here. It's not as rigid of a place. It is a place to come and rest and find solace and haven from life. We do have some organization by God. He's in Ephesians 5, you know, he has the father's head and the father loving his wife and the brothers loving their sisters. and each other, not fighting and scrapping, right? We have that. We have that whole part. Family is not as rigid of a structure. And I would say we're also safe to say that the church is not as rigid of a structure either. Even though we have a lot of direction given to the church, we said all things should be done decently and in order, according to 1 Corinthians 14:40. We have different assignments given to the church leaders. We have the apostles, the prophets, the elders, the deacons, and so on in 1 Corinthians 12. So don't feel like your whole life has to be organized into oblivion, but or managed out of control. But I think there's definitely some blessings to taking some chaos and using the creativity that God has given us, because I think God sees beauty in organization. Psalm 122, 3, I'll go ahead and read that here in closing. Psalm 122, 3 says, Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together. Whither the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, unto the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. And this is a song of ascents where the people were going up to Jerusalem. And they're saying, Jerusalem is a well-built, beautiful city. It's well-organized, and it's well put in place. May we remember these things. May we remember to be organized, to keep our lives in order, to be a good testimony to others, to not waste our time or our resources. And may God bless each one of you.